Hey, welcome to High Cheese with Darren Maloney. Today is Friday, May 13th, 2022. Friday the 13th. Now, this is really important, what I want to talk about over the next 3 or 4 minutes. And thank God for Michelle Bachmann. Michelle Bachmann is the former congresswoman from Minnesota. She's now the dean at Regent University. But she was on Steve Bannon earlier this week, and she had talked about the World Health Organization is having their General Assembly on May 22nd through 28th. And one of the things they are going to vote on is a recommendation from the Biden administration to give away our sovereignty to the WHO. I can't be any clearer about this. The Biden administration is recommending that we hand over our sovereignty as individuals, as Americans, to the WHO. And what they are going to take up, the assembly, is they're going to vote on a resolution that would give the head of the WHO, Tedros, the ability to declare a health emergency in the United States or any other country in the world that's a member of the WHO. On an arbitrary basis, without a process. So what I want to do is I want to go to the clip with Michelle. And again, thank goodness for Michelle. You know, you ever hear the saying that, she thinks she's the smartest person in the room? Well, I think in Michelle's case, I think it's true because she's an extremely bright person, extremely smart. I've always been impressed that she's a tax attorney. And in law firms, your tax attorneys are usually your smartest people. So let's go to this clip. It's from the War Room with Steve Bannon, and then we'll come back and discuss.
That's right. It's hard to believe, Steve, but in less than 2 weeks' time, a vote will take place in Geneva, Switzerland, at the World Health Assembly. They're important because they're the governing body of the World Health Organization. The Biden administration is bringing amendments that would propose that all nations of the earth cede their sovereignty over national healthcare decisions to the WHO, the World Health Organization. So what this would mean, Steve, is that the WHO would have decision-making authority to intervene into the United States government policy in any nation of the world without our permission. So, for instance, the lockdowns where you see 26 million people today locked down in Shanghai, China, they can't leave their apartments or homes. The WHO would have the authority to be able to impose that here in the United States for whatever pretext they want. They don't have to show data. They could do this. What this does, Steve, bottom line, is it creates a platform for global governance. Global governance through the WHO. This is what people need to know. It's time sensitive. No one knew about this. The Biden administration gave these proposed amendments to the World Health Organization on January 18th. No one in America knew this until April 12th, less than a month ago. The Biden administration posted these amendments. But in less than 2 weeks in Geneva, Switzerland, the delegates will vote on this. I will tell you, as a dean of the Graduate School of Government at Regent University, as a former member of Congress, as a former candidate for the United States President, I will tell you, this isn't just our hair on fire. This is real. This is the greatest attack we have ever had on United States sovereignty.
And in a few minutes, I will let you know what you can do to help stop this. But this is absolutely dangerous, what this Biden administration is doing. And it's being done through the HHS, Becerra. And what they're doing is they're using the administrative state to take away our rights through the back door. Now, in episode 2 of my podcast, I highlighted the dangers of the administrative state and the problem with the Supreme Court over the last 20 or 30 years having use judicial deference to let the administrative state do what they want, for lack of a better word. And most of you know, the administrative state is dangerous. It's part of the deep state. It's part of the resistance to Donald Trump when he was president. It's part of the resistance to you and me. So what the Biden administration is doing is they're using the administrative state to backdoor a way to get rid of your rights. And they've submitted these amendments to the governing body of the WHO. Now, why would they even have a governing body? These are not elected officials, but they decided as a group to take power. So they've created the appearance that they're some kind of democratic assembly, but they're not. It's just a group of people that said, I'm going to take away your power as an individual. I am going to take away your power as a country. And we've got people in the Biden administration that are all for that because they dislike this country and they dislike you and they dislike me. Now, our delegates to the assembly, it's being led by Becerra and a couple of his cohorts, and they're going to vote on this on May 22nd, unless you and I can stop it. Now, there's two ways we can stop this. The first thing is we have to put pressure on our elected officials in the federal government. That means the Senate, and that means our congresspeople. Now, I want to direct you to a website. It's called StopTheWHO.com. StopTheWHO.com. And it's a simple website. Go down to the second block. It's I think it's brownish. Just click on that, and it'll show you how to contact your elected officials. It'll bring it to a screen, and then you can you have to meander a little bit through it, and it'll show you. You could actually put in your address, and it'll pop up who your congressman is. And call these people. Call them locally and say, what are you going to do about this? And you have to put pressure on them. Don't call their Washington office. If you live in New Jersey and you're in the 9th District of New Jersey, call their local office. Just Google the congressperson, get their local office number, and call them up. They have to stop this resolution in the WHO. And you don't have to get into detail. Just say, this is giving away our sovereignty to Tedros. It's allowing Tedros to declare health emergencies in the United States, and I'm against that. Just keep it simple and tell them that. But we have to put pressure on them between now and the 22nd of May to stop this. Now, there's also an email address. It's called oga.rsvp@hhs.gov. Again, that's oga.rsvp@hhs.gov. Just shoot them out an email. Simply say, I am against Tedros declaring emergencies in the United States. And the resolution before the WHO General Assembly that allows him to do this should be removed. Simple as that. Now, if that fails, we have to rely on our next president to get us out of the WHO. Simple as that. Because here's the problem. The problem is that, and this is the problem with the administrative state, they slip in these rules and regulations, and they suddenly become law. Because as I said in my second episode, the administrative state has their own judges that declare whether something is legal or not. So the administrative state, these departments hire their own judges to make a determination on whether the regulations that they put into the Federal Register is legal or not. But historically, the Supreme Court has always utilized the term judicial deference in the sense that, oh, they didn't want to touch it. Let the administrative judges just declare. We don't want to know anything about it. Well, that's got to stop. And I said in episode two, there's two cases before the Supreme Court that can help chip away at the powers of the administrative state. The one I wanted to talk about is Becerra v. Empire State. And essentially what it is, the HHS, Becerra, has come in and changed what they pay hospitals for their Medicare patients. So they arbitrarily just started changing what they're going to reimburse the hospitals for. This is after the court system has already said that you can't make changes to this. So that should come out sometime in June, I think. But again, we have to chip away at the administrative state. Because the problem is that if this thing is passed and it's allowed into our federal register and it becomes part of our regulations, you now have a massive, massive legal process in order to get rid of it. And think about it. All you need is the right administrative law judge and the right elected officials to go along with what the WHO wants to do. So it's really important that you get on this. Now, we know the WHO is controlled by the Chinese. And you talk about interference from another country in our elections. Say we have an election coming up. And Tedros just decides to declare an emergency in the United States. And we have this mail-in ballot fiasco as a result. So now we have Tedros affecting our elections. Because with these mail-in ballots, you increase dramatically the probability of cheating. And I think 2000 Mules showed us this. So again, go to the website, stopthewho.com. It's a good starting point. But this has to be stopped. You know, this medical field and this health field is just entirely corrupt today. We've got doctors that are being paid by the pharmaceutical industry to push drugs on their patients. We've got Gavin Newsom. I've heard of reports from California that Gavin Newsom is pushing a law that would allow medical boards in the state of California to strip doctors of their licenses if they didn't agree with the party line in California regarding medicine. That's absolutely unacceptable. Now we've got reports that the NIH and its employees received over $350 million in payments from third parties. Now we're assuming that it's the pharmaceutical industry. And let me just read you a report here. And this is from Open the Books. And what they do is they do open public information requests. And they found that the National Institute of Health, Anthony Fauci's employers, and I'm reading from the article, doled out $30 billion in government grants to roughly 56,000 recipients. The largest of taxpayer money buys a lot of favor and clout within the scientific research and healthcare industries. However, in our breaking investigation, we found hundreds of millions of dollars in payments also flow the other way. These are royalty payments from third-party payers, like pharmaceutical companies, back to the NIH and individual NIH scientists. We estimate that between the fiscal years 2010 and 2020, more than $350 million in royalties were paid by third parties to the agencies and their scientists. Because those payments enrich the agency and its scientists, each and every royalty payment could be a potential conflict of interest. They found that agency leadership and top scientists at the NIH received royalty payments. These include Anthony Fauci, Francis Collins, and Clifford Lane. Now, I just want to know how this can be legal. Who set this up at the federal government where employees of the federal government can receive essentially kickbacks from the pharmaceutical industry? I just don't understand how that's possible, how that can be legal. And what dumb bureaucrat in Washington allowed this type of behavior to happen? Because this is nothing more than kickbacks. I want to know, was it passed through their regular salaries? Were they given an additional stipend check? It's important. If they're giving these royalties and it runs through their regular salary, that salary is subject to pensions and that costs the taxpayer money. I just don't understand this. Like, to me, I was a government finance officer. I sold close to $1 billion in bonds during my career. And I work with a lot of Wall Street guys. But did I get a kickback from them for helping them sell bonds for the township? I would go to jail if that happened. So why does this happen here? Who allowed this to happen here? A corrupt system, a corrupt Washington allows this. And they hid it from the public. I just don't understand this. Oh, I do understand it. I'm sorry. I do understand. It's a corrupt system. And they're part of a corrupt system. Fauci's a part of a corrupt system. Collins is part of a corrupt system. Our doctors are part of the corrupt system. This has got to change. And I can't wait till the Republicans get in so they can start an investigation, a thorough investigation in this. This is absolutely absurd. Now, apparently what happened is the arrangements made that if an employee helps patent a virus or something else, and that virus is used in commercially, they're allowed to benefit from that. That employee is allowed to benefit through these kickbacks, and which is extremely just bad policy. Extremely bad policy. So I'm working for the government, but if I discover something, it's mine. I benefit from it personally. I've always been under the assumption that my work product is not mine. It's my employer's ownership. But this is a corrupt system we have here. And it's an absolute disgrace. Now, the second thing I want to turn to is the new NIH director, Larry Tabak. He just came out and said that the NIH hid information from the public that could have been helpful in determining where the coronavirus came from. Was it from a lab or was it from a bat? Well, they hid information. And let me just go to this clip. And this is Tabak getting questioned by Congressman Herrera Butler. So let's go to this clip and then we'll come back and discuss.
The archive never deleted the sequence. It just did not make it available for interrogation.
So wait, you have the information
still? We have the information.
So it wasn't, the way it was reported is it was pulled out, the early genomic sequencing was removed by a Chinese researcher.
So anybody who submits to the Sequence Read Archive is allowed to ask for it to be removed, and that investigator did do that, but we never erase it.
Oh, so you don't have the information anymore?
We do. We never erase the information. We keep it.
So they were with it, they were able to withdraw public viewing of it?
Public viewing, that's correct.
Okay, so researchers can apply to the NIH and get the information from you.
And so in the way that it was originally eliminated from public view, it was withdrawn. And that's the most difficult for people to access. The error that was made, and we found this out after a review of all of our processes, was it should have been suppressed.
Oh my goodness. You can see how Tabak made it so far in the federal government. Did you hear all the doublespeak? They're trying to find the genome sequence of certain virus samples, and that would be helpful in determining whether the coronavirus was lab created or not. And the NIH withheld information from the public. I just find it interesting, his response. His response was, well, we didn't withhold it. We wanted to suppress it. Well, what's the difference? So it's this wording, mumble jumble, that they use in Washington to convolute everything. So we didn't really hide it from the public. We wanted to suppress it. That was his answer. And it's these kind of people that have gone far in Washington, the doublespeak. So again, we should look into this further when the Republicans take over in November. This has to be done. I got to talk about this baby formula fiasco. Now you think about it. You've got in February, and I'm just pointing out the incompetence of this administration. So here you have one of the largest manufacturers of baby formula, Abbott, up in Michigan. The FDA closed it down because of contamination in February. And since then, we have the border crisis. We've had all these people with their babies coming through our southern border. And we've got the war in Ukraine. So in the midst of closing down one of the largest manufacturers of baby formula, we've got a border crisis that requires tons of baby formula to the southern border. And we've got the Ukraine crisis that's doing two things. It's disrupting the supply of ingredients for the formula, as well as us sending for baby formula. I'm sure we're sending baby formula over to Ukraine and Poland and wherever the refugees are winding up. So let me sum this up. We've got the manufacturer, a large manufacturer, not producing. We've got the border crisis and we've got Ukraine, and no one in the administration thought that, oh boy, we may not have enough baby formula. But they don't think that way. Because you know what their mind is? They're so simple-minded in this Biden administration. If someone ever did bring that up, they'll say, oh, you have no proof of that. Where's the evidence that there's going to be a shortage? These are the type of people that only figure out that they've got no gas when they run out of gas. This is what simpletons these people are. Now, I'm not saying everybody that runs out of gas is a simpleton. But these people in this bureaucracy only know that gas runs out when they run out of gas. And this is just another example of no foresight with the Biden administration, incompetence of the Biden administration. Because I'm telling you, if Trump was in office, his administration would have figured it out that, you know what? We just lost a big supplier of baby formula in Michigan. We've got a border crisis that requires babies to be fed. And we've got the Ukraine problem. And you don't think that somebody in the Trump administration would have figured out that, ooh, we're going to have a supply problem down the road. And now you have the fact checkers out there. The Washington Post fact checks this because there was a Congressman Comac, I think, from Florida. Someone had sent her pictures of these pallets and pallets of baby formula that's at the border. And you know what the fact checker said? Well, the law requires that we give baby formula to the babies that are here illegally. So it's really not Biden's fault. Yes, it is Biden's fault because you created the border crisis. Because all those babies at the border that we're sending baby formula to, poor people in Michigan can't feed their kids. And that's because of Biden's border policy. So again, you've got the Washington Post fact checkers running cover for the Biden administration. So now the Biden administration rushing around trying to get speed up deliveries of baby formula from other sources outside the country. Who knows if they can get it? Now, I just heard that they opened up the plant today. Now, what took them so long? It was February. It's now May. What took them so long to open up that plant in Michigan? Because it's the typical bureaucrat, not my job, but you're responsible for this, Biden. And it's a shame. We've got out of control inflation. We can't feed our babies. We probably wind up sending our kids to a war in Europe because of you. And you're just a dawdling old fool. Now, speaking of Ukraine, the House passed earlier this week a $40 billion package in Ukraine aid. Now, it went from originally $33 billion to $40 billion. So once the recommendation from Biden went to Congress, they upped it by $7 billion. And I think it was 57 Republicans voted against this. And again, in typical Washington fashion, they rushed it through. They don't want you to think about it. They don't want you to analyze it. They just want to rush it through. So think about that. $40 billion for Ukraine. That could have bought a lot of baby formula. That could have helped a lot of people here in the United States. Instead of prolonging a war in Ukraine, that ultimately Ukraine's going to lose. Now, I heard one of the responses from one of the Republican congressmen that voted for this aid. He said his goal is to have Russia removed entirely from Ukraine. It's just not going to happen. Not because I don't want it to happen. Russia's army is just too big. Did you ever take a look at the size comparison of the two armies? And the amount of equipment that the army has? And not only the nukes that Russia has? And this Republican congressman, I don't even know what his name is. Never heard of him before. I don't want to know of him now. You say, oh yeah, we can push Russia out of, that's victory. We can push Russia out of Ukraine. That's fantasy. And you're getting people killed because of your fantasy. But anyway, they rushed this through. And thank God there was at least one congressman that spoke some kind of sense. Congressman Roy. And I'm going to play a quick clip from him. So let's play this clip and then we'll get back.
But we got a $40 billion bill at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I haven't had a chance to review the bill. My staff is poring over the pages trying to see what's in it. You want to talk about the institution? You want to talk about standing up alongside Ukraine? Why don't we actually have a debate on the floor of the People's House instead of the garbage of getting a $40 billion bill at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, not paid for, without having any idea what's really in it, with a massive slush fund that goes to the State Department, $13 billion, $8 billion for the Economic Support Fund, $110 million for embassy security. We've got $40 billion that is unpaid for, and you want to sit here and lecture this body about what we're going to do or not do about standing alongside Ukraine? Why don't we talk about the American people who are hurting, the wide open borders, the inflation that's killing people, the jobs that people can't get because of the cost of goods and services in this country? Sitting here and being lectured to when I don't even have time to look at a $40 billion unpaid bill. I make a motion to adjourn.
Well, they didn't adjourn. They passed a bill. And that was Chip Roy from Texas. What I want to know, what happened from March to today? In March, they passed the federal budget, which included, I think, $16 billion for Ukraine. So what happened over the past few months that we now have to give them $40 billion? And Ukraine says they're going to have to come back for more because the war, from a military standpoint, the war is costing them $7 billion a month. So they're going to come back again? And again, is that what they expect? Is that what we should expect? We've got a $30 trillion debt and we're funding Ukraine. This is a European issue. Let Europe take care of this, not us. We're funding this. European countries are throwing in very little. And every dollar and every day this war goes on, it's killing more Ukrainians. And that $40 billion could be used here. $40 billion could have bought a lot of baby formula. Could have corrected a lot of problems we have in the U.S. right now. So what happened? The bill went to the Senate, and Rand Paul is holding the bill up because he wants some accountability. He wants to know how this money is going to be spent, where it's going to be spent, and who is going to be responsible for it. Because I'm hearing these terrible rumors. Because don't forget, Ukraine is one of the most corrupt countries in the world. And who's going to get hold of this money? And what are they going to do with this money? So that's all that Rand Paul is asking. So it's delayed right now until he gets some answers. Now he's getting pressure from McConnell and he's getting pressure from Schumer. Because I'm sure they're getting pressure from the military-industrial complex. They want money. Because some of this money is going to eventually go back to them. Because where do you think Ukraine's going to be buying their weapons from? Our military contractors. So some of this is good for them. That's why anytime you hear anything about these talking heads about the war, find out what their agenda is. Like I was listening to one of the local talk shows. I think it was the Cats Roundtable, and they had the former NATO commander Stavridis, and he's in there. He's pushing for this war, and he's pushing, and he's pushing. Yeah, we got to do this. We got to give them more aid. Well, what he doesn't tell you is that he's a managing director for the Carlyle Group, which is one of the largest investors in defense contracting companies. Really? That guy doesn't have an agenda? That guy's not co-opted? I don't want to hear from him. So that's where we are. So Biden had a press conference this week. He had it on Tuesday. And I think somebody tipped him off about the CPI number that was coming in on Wednesday. And CPI came in above expectations. The expectations were 8.1%, but the actual came in at 8.3%. So I think what happened is Biden was trying to get ahead of this, and he had a press conference. And I'm just going to play a little bit of the press conference. So let me just play it, and we'll come back and discuss.
Do you take any responsibility for inflation in this country? Do you take any responsibility for your policies?
I think our policies help, not hurt. Think about what they say. The vast majority of the economists think that this is going to be a real tough problem to solve, but it's not because of spending.
How wrong can you be? It's all about government spending. It's all about Biden throwing billions and billions of dollars with his programs into the economy when the economy was already coming back. So we've already had an economy that was coming back fast. And his administration was not capable of picking that up. Instead, what they did is they threw more money into the economy. They gave states, municipalities, counties billions and billions of dollars just to spend. And that's what causes today's inflation. Now he's going off. He's blaming Putin. He's blaming the war. He's blaming everybody but him. Now just think about this. He loves to blame Putin for this. But inflation before the war was 7.9%. And it's 8.3% now. So you can't blame Putin for inflation when it was at 7.9% before the war. This administration and this man is just incompetent. Now, I'm going to just play a quick clip. It's from Univision. And it's in Spanish, and I'll just translate it afterwards. And I've been saying all along is that the Hispanic community is dumping the Democratic Party big time. This is one of the Univision anchors, Luis Carlos Velez. And I'm just going to play a short few seconds of it just to let you know where Univision is and a lot of the Hispanics in this country are at.
Sino también que fueron una descarada oportunidad para dispararle a los republicanos. Solucionar esto no le corresponde, presidente, a sus opositores. No le corresponde a la Reserva Federal, no le corresponde a las empresas. Le corresponde a usted. Usted se hizo elegir. Usted debe liderar para solucionar y convencer con los que debe gobernar.
So essentially what Velez says is, he said, Mr. President, stop the blame game. This is not the Republicans' fault. This is not the Fed's fault. It's your fault. Inflation is your fault. People can't eat off of politics. People eat off of their jobs. And that's what he said. And again, the Hispanic community, and again, the Hispanic community is made up of so many different cultures. And when I reference Hispanic, I just mean from countries that speak Spanish as their language. We have Cubans, we have Mexicans, Ecuadorians, all different cultures, but they are all leaving the Democratic Party in droves for the Republican Party. They want jobs, and they don't want inflation. Okay, let's touch on the markets for a minute, and then we'll go. It was another wild week, and today reflected this wild week. And let me just read from CNBC. And it says here, the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 466.36 points. points to 32,196.66, or 1.47%. The S&P 500 gained 2.39% to close at 4,023.89, and the NASDAQ composite jumped 3.82% to 11,805. The S&P on Friday finished its best day since March 4th, while the NASDAQ posted its strongest one-day gain since November 2020. Despite Friday's gain, the major averages posted losses for the week, with the Dow closing down 2.14% and posting its first seven-week losing streak since 2001. The S&P fell 2.4% and hit its longest weekly losing streak since 2011, while the NASDAQ slipped 2.8%. And it says here, just as trees don't climb to the sky, prices don't fall forever, said a chief investment strategist. Even in corrections and approaching bear markets, they tend to experience relief rallies, which is what the markets appear to be doing today. So today you had a relief rally. The market is still trending down. No one quite knows when it's going to bottom out at this point because there's so many headwinds for the markets. And crypto is getting hammered this week. Bitcoin fell dramatically. It made some comeback today, but crypto, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and XRP all were up today after a brutal week. So with that said, I just want to thank you for listening, and you have a good weekend, and I will see you on Tuesday.